Romans chapter 12, we want to pick up in just a moment, begin our reading at verse 14, be reading in the New King James Version. Remember, chapter 12 begins the second major section of this book. The first section, of course, was the doctrinal section, the first chapters up to this point. And now we have opportunity to make application of one being saved by the grace of God and through faith and obedience to His will. So we make application to justification by faith that has been clearly brought out for us in the first 11 chapters of this book. We noted that chapter 12, verse 1 and 2, dealt with an attitude toward God. Then we noted in chapter 12, verse 3 through verse 13, attitudes that we should express toward our brethren. And then we're going to read in just a moment, verse 14 through verse 21, attitudes toward our enemies. Then attitudes will continue in the chapter 13 with attitudes concerning government, the first seven verses of that chapter. And we'll see attitudes regarding and toward our neighbors in verse 8 through 10 of chapter 13. And then some summary statements at the end of chapter 13. So you might say this is attitudes regarding Christian living for those who've been justified by faith. Picking up in verse 14, again, with attitudes toward our enemies to the end of the chapter. Bless those who persecute you and bless and do not curse. Rejoice with those who rejoice and weep with those who weep. Be of the same mind toward one another. Do not set your mind on high things, but associate with the humble. Do not be wise in your own opinions. Repay no one evil for evil. Have regard for good things in the sight of all men. If it is possible, as much as depends on you, live peaceably with all men. Beloved, do not avenge yourselves, but rather give place to wrath. For it is written, "Vengeance is mine, I will repay," says the Lord. Therefore, if your enemy is hungry, feed him. If he is thirsty, give him a drink. For in so doing, you will heap coals of fire on his head. Do not be overcome by evil, but overcome evil with good. So it's easy to see in this section of text that this deals with attitudes toward our enemies. Bless those who persecute you and bless and do not curse. Rejoice with those who rejoice, weep with those who weep. And we ended there last Wednesday evening. So we pick up with verse 16, but keeping it in the context and remembering what was just said in verse 15, rejoice with those who rejoice and weep with those who weep. And then it says, be of the same mind toward one another. Now, Paul uses this same expression in 1 Corinthians chapter 1 and verse 10 in reference to being united in one's belief and teaching. But here I don't think it has that connection. I think it's actually connected with that which was just mentioned in verse 15. Rejoice with those who rejoice and weep with those who weep. But you're unable to do that unless you're of the same mind, note this, toward one another. Toward one another. Of the same mind. The same mind. Same attitude and disposition regarding things. That which is under consideration is when there are brethren who rejoice and who have cause of rejoicing, you should rejoice with them. Of course, one of the sins that gets in the way of rejoicing with others is envy. Sometimes we become envious. They have cause to rejoice, perhaps because they're an heir of a large fortune. But we're envious of what has happened to them in their life. And because of envy, we can't rejoice with them. We ought to be able to rejoice with every child of God when good things happen to them. If they're promoted at work, we ought to rejoice with them. Even though you may work along beside them or work in the same company. You didn't get promoted, but they did. Still rejoice with them. There are many reasons why we might rejoice with others who rejoice. And we should not find envy to stand in our way to be able to do that. It's always easy to weep with those who weep. That is, those who are mourning the loss of loved ones, we can feel the loss. We can feel the hurt that they feel, especially if we're kindly affectionate toward one another, as mentioned back in verse 10. And if we express brotherly love for one another, we can certainly weep with those who weep. But again, sometimes it's hard to rejoice with those who rejoice. Let's not let envy and jealousy stand in the way of that. And so I believe verse 16 is in connection with that. Be of the same mind toward one another. So if you're of the same mind toward one another, it doesn't mean you're thinking the same thing particularly. But if they're rejoicing, you're rejoicing. If they're sad or weeping, you're sad and weeping. That's the ideal of being of the same mind toward one another, I believe, in the context. Then he says, do not set your mind on high things, but associate with the humble. Do not be wise in your own opinions. So do not set your mind on high things. The high things, of course, would be those things which are elevated in the eyes of man. The high things would be things like such things that would cause people to be puffed up with pride, become haughty, become one who thinks himself to be superior than others in some way. So do not set your mind on high things. But it says associate with the humble. Now if you're reading from the King James Version, it uses that word condescend to men of low estate. Condescend, but it's not really a good translation there, condescend. Because the word condescend is associated with you thinking yourself to be superior to someone. You might give someone that impression sometime, and they might respond by saying, don't be condescending to me. And so the thought that is under consideration here, do not set your mind on high things. The high things would be that which puffs up man, which fills him with pride and arrogance and haughtiness and even superiority. But then he says, and the New King James Version, but associate with the humble. That is, associate with those who are low in the estimation of man's view. The low, those who are not, you might say, the movers and shakers. Those who are not seen as those who are superior in society. Those who are not seen as those who might be filled with conceit or haughtiness. That's the low and the humble. So do not set your mind on high things. I guess you might say, don't become haughty and arrogant and think yourself to be better than everybody else. Be able to associate with somebody that is of a more humble state. Sometimes people find it hard to be able to do that, to go and to minister to the poor because they see themselves better than the poor. And so that's the attitude being expressed to the Christians here, is don't think yourself better than everybody else, but be able to associate with the humble, those who are low. Do not be wise, he said, in your own conceit or your own opinions, in your own conceit, in your own conceited attitude, puffed up and arrogant attitude that you have. Because sometimes that's what one thinks himself to be so wise, that's what happens. He puffs himself up, fills himself with pride. And so, do not be wise in your own opinion and your own estimation of yourself. Don't think of yourself more highly than you ought to think. Repay no one evil for evil. Repay or recompense no one, that is, no man, evil for evil. Evil is doing that which causes harm. Exercising ill will toward another. So if someone does something that is causes harm or is of a harmful nature directed toward you, whether it be in word or in deed, what's our first inclination is to repay or recompense in the same way. If a young child called another child a bad name, usually the child will turn around and call him a bad name. It's childish behavior. Well, when someone does evil to us, let's not have the attitude and disposition, I'm going to get even and do the same thing back to them, because that makes us evil. It makes us just like them. They've sinned against us, and what have we done? Well, we've just turned around and sinned against them. So repay no one evil for evil. Have regard for good things in the sight of all men. Have regard for good things in the sight of all men. That is, provide things honest. The King James Version says, have regard for, that is, care for. But actually, the word in the Greek here that is translated have regard or provide things honest has reference to forethought. That is, think about it beforehand is the idea in the Greek word. Think about it beforehand and care for or provide good things in the sight of all men or before all men. Now, this is in connection with repay no one evil for evil. If someone does something evil to you, don't turn around and do something evil back. But already have made the decision beforehand to do something good. Do something good for good things in the sight of all men. Always have already in your mind, if someone does something evil to do, toward you, already have decided beforehand that you're going to do something good. And this is going to come out later on in the context as we go on. So have regard for good things in the sight of all men. If it is possible, as much as depends on you, live peaceably with all men. Note that little word if, conditional. If it is possible, is it possible to live in peace with all men? No, it's not. No, it's not. If you're going to be a Christian, you will be persecuted. If you're going to be a Christian and live a godly life, you will not be able to live in peace with all men. Jesus was not able to live in peace with all men while he was upon earth. The apostles were not able to live in peace with all men while they were upon earth. But here's the point. If living in peace is determined between you and the other fella, don't be the one at fault. Don't let it be because you are not able to live in peace with all men. It's because the other man is at fault and not you. So if it is possible, as much as depends on you, live peaceably with all men. How do we do that? Especially in those who seek to do us harm, seek to bring evil upon us. Well, let's not turn around and repay evil to them. Let's think about the good we're going to do beforehand in the sight of all men. Because the doing of good sometime to others who bring evil upon you may soften their attitude and disposition of heart toward you. They may have a change of mind. Their conscience might be bothered simply because the way that you have treated them compared to the way that they have treated you simply might get to them. So if it is possible, as much as depends on you, live peaceably with all men. Verse 19, Romans 13, or Romans 12. Beloved, do not avenge yourselves, but rather give place to wrath. Now, this is not the same thing that was just mentioned in repay no one evil for evil. Beloved, dearly beloved, most loved, do not avenge yourselves. Sometimes when harm comes to us, we want justice. And that's what's under consideration. The vengeance mentioned here is justice. Remember the parable that Jesus spoke that men always ought to pray, and then he used a woman who was always going to the king and wearing him out, seeking vengeance on her enemies. Well, that's what's under consideration here. Vengeance. God repays, that is, he brings about justice to those who have wronged you. So we're not to seek justice in seeking vengeance against someone. Because what are we going to do? Oftentimes, our justice might be harsher than the justice that is really called for. As a matter of fact, we see it sometimes when justice is administered in our courts. Sometimes people will say, well, he ought to get more. He ought to be put to death. He ought to be kept in prison for life. But justice was meted out, and we're not the one exercising justice and vengeance. And so if something is done to us, we perhaps want harsher vengeance, harsher punishment meted out. But God knows, and he can determine the level of vengeance to exercise. Beloved, do not avenge yourselves, but rather give place to wrath. Give place to wrath. Give place means to give room. Give room or opportunity for wrath. Wrath under consideration is the wrath or anger of God exercised in punishment. So give place for the punishment that's going to come from God. Vengeance is mine, I will repay, says the Lord. That's where the vengeance is coming from. That's where the justice is coming from. It's coming from God. It doesn't come from you. God will determine the justice that needs to be exercised. Verse 20, therefore, if your enemy is hungry, feed him. If he is thirsty, give him a drink, for in so doing you will heap coals of fire on his head. Therefore, now this goes all the way back to verse 17, repay no one evil for evil, have a guard for good things in the sight of all men. If it's possible, as much as depends on you, live peaceably with all men. Don't seek vengeance. Do not avenge yourselves. Therefore, if your enemy is hungry, feed him. If he's thirsty, give him a drink. What are you doing to him? You're doing good to him. Remember back in verse 17, have regard for good things in the sight of all men. Have regard. Again, the Greek word there actually has reference to it. Think about it ahead of time. Think about it before time. If someone does evil to you, you automatically do good to them. If your enemy is hungry, feed him. If he is thirsty, give him a drink. Those two things are simply just used as doing good to your enemy. Doing good. Now you could use other things instead of feeding him or giving him a drink. Romans 12, verse 20, the end. For in so doing you will heap coals of fire on his head. Just simply a way of saying you'll bring great shame upon him. Great pain and agony to his conscience if you do good to your enemy. If you do good to him, you'll shame him by doing that. So that heaping coals of fire on him, on his head, that would be, literally, that would be very painful. Well, it pains him, the one, your enemy, to whom you've done good to. It pains him that he has been so evil and hateful and expressed such ill will toward you that you've done good to him. Verse 21, do not be overcome by evil, but overcome evil, note this, with good. Where does that good start? Back in verse 17. So the way we overcome evil is we overcome or become victorious over evil with the doing of good. That's what we do. We do that which is beneficial, that which is noble, that which is honorable, that which is upright. And we do that even toward our enemies. Chapter 13, verse 1, let's read. And this has reference to attitudes toward government. The first seven verses, Romans 13. Let every soul be subject to the governing authorities, for there is no authority except from God, and the authorities that exist are appointed by God. Therefore, whoever resists the authority resists the ordinances of God, and those who resist will bring judgment on themselves. For rulers are not a terror to good works, but to evil. Do you want to be unafraid of the authority? Do what is good, and you will have praise from the same. For he is God's minister to you for good. But if you do evil, be afraid, for he does not bear the sword in vain. For he is God's minister, an avenger to execute wrath on him who practices evil. Therefore, you must be subject not only because of wrath, but also for conscience' sake. For because of this, you also pay taxes, for they are God's ministers attending continually to this very thing. Render, therefore, to all their due taxes to whom taxes are due, customs to whom customs, fear to whom fear, honor to whom honor. So chapter 13, Romans, and in verse 1, let every soul be subject, that is, in subjection to the governing authorities or the higher powers. The governing authorities, of course, are the civil authorities, whether they be in the city, in the county, in the state, at federal government. The governing authorities, those who govern in positions over others in the land in which we dwell. For every soul must be subject to the governing authorities, for there is no authority except from God. That is, the authority or power that these people have actually comes from God. As Brother David mentioned a few moments ago, government is an institution of God. For there is no authority except from God, and the authorities that exist, note this, are appointed or ordained by God. The authorities that exist. Now, government, and it doesn't say what kind of government. Government, regardless of where it is an institution of God. God ordained it. Maybe it's a communist government, a socialist government, democratic government, republic government. God still ordained it. He still determined that it was going to exist for a purpose. Verse 2, therefore, whoever resists the authority resists the ordinance of God. The ordinance or commandment of God. And those who resist will bring judgment on themselves. You know, government has the right to govern our lives. Now, sometimes they might govern in such a way that we don't find very pleasing and acceptable. But nonetheless, it's still a government that has been instituted by God. Doesn't mean that because God ordained it, God put it in place, it does not mean that he is pleased with it. So don't get the wrong idea in the word ordained there. Just because God appointed it, ordained, matter of fact, it's the same word we saw recently in our study in the book of Acts, where the church at Antioch determined to send Paul, Barnabas, and certain others to Jerusalem. Determined. Government was a determination of God. It was appointed by God, ordained by God. Just because he ordained it, appointed or determined that it was going to exist to govern man, does not mean that he is pleased with it or with any form that man wants it to be. For rulers, here's the governmental officials, for rulers are not a terror to good works. Now here's the here's the purpose of government. Rulers are not a terror to good works, but to evil. Good works. Works that are honorable, noble, virtuous, upright. So rulers, governmental officials, are not to be a terror to good works, but to evil. Do you want to be unafraid of the authority? That is, of the ruler? If you want to be unafraid of him, then do what is good. Do what is noble and upright, honorable in the sight of men. Do that which is praiseworthy, and you will have praise from the same, that is, from the ruler. Usually that's the way it is, you know. If you want to receive praise from the governmental officials, then do good. You know, people who cry out about, well, defund the police, they don't like the police. Well, the police are to try to keep people from doing that which is evil. They're to arrest and incarcerate those people who do evil. That's the purpose of government. For rulers are a terror to good works, are not a terror to good works, but to evil. Verse 4, Romans 13. For he is God's minister. Who is God's minister? Well, the ruler or the authority mentioned in verse 3. For he is God's minister. That is, he's God's servant to you for good. Now, even a wicked ruler, a wicked government official, can still be a servant of God. Remember, Nebuchadnezzar was God's servant. But yet he destroyed the people of Israel. For he is God's minister to you for good. But if you do evil, be afraid. Why? For, here's the Greek conjunction, for he does not bear the sword in vain. He does not bear the sword in vain. That is, he has the right and authority to execute capital punishment. He doesn't bear the sword in vain. What's a sword for? Execution. And so the government, the ruler, doesn't bear the sword in vain. Now, many people do not like the death penalty. But what does the government and what has God authorized it to do? Execute and carry out the death penalty to those who do evil. Those who are guilty of a crime that should be put to death should be put to death. The government does not bear the sword in vain. But evidently, in a lot of states, it does. They've done away with the capital punishment. So they bear the sword of God in vain. Note the last portion of verse 4. For he, that is the government ruler, the government official, for he is God's minister, again a servant, an avenger, to execute wrath or punishment on him who practices evil. Therefore, verse 5, you must be subject, not only because of wrath, not only because the ruler or the official can execute and carry out punishment, that's what wrath is. Therefore, you must be subject. You must subject yourself to government rule and obey the laws of the land, not only because you're going to be punished if you do not, but also for conscience sake. That is, because you want to keep your conscience clean and pure and upright, and that's what a clean conscience requires. That you subject yourself and submit yourself to the rule of government over you. Now again, as long as the government doesn't call upon you to do that which is contrary to the will of God. We all know that. We're out of time. Let's stop there. Any questions or comments? We'll pick up at Romans 13 and verse 6 next Wednesday evening. Romans 13, verse 6.